Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
Can I say something that I think is bullshit?
You're a fool, agent.
Yes, we sell out.
He also told me he was on acid.
Yeah, you better wash that mic off.
I was gonna fill it up with my own urine.
Alcoholica.
And I talked about digging a hole in fucking dirt, smoking hash through the ground.
Oh, I don't know. It's all kinds of shit.
I'm shower filled with women.
Sit your ass down, Lars.
Shoot a pair of woman's legs walking down the street.
8 women washing you down at once, you know.
Coming up here, Lars points to me. He said, there's Beavis, see? And there he is, right there.
And his skin is bubbling like on the Toxic Avenger.
Boyfriends and dads looking for me.
Ted Beavis?
Singing along, fucking along, doing something the fuck along. Here we go!
Hey, this is Edwin Outwater, conductor and musical director of SNM2, and you're listening to And Podcast for All.
Welcome back to A Podcast for All. I'm Shane Obershaw.
And I'm Jeff Winslow.
10 seconds ago before we signed on, I just watched a seventh grader hit a half-court shot for 10K.
Only 10K?
I feel
like you should get a little bit more than that.
I remember back in the 90s, like they had these million-dollar shots from just behind half court.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's because the 90s, they promised you all sorts of things that didn't happen. Like Pepsi saying that you could win a jet. Have you seen the documentary, Where's My Jet?
About the Harrier?
Yeah. I love that documentary. I thought it was hilarious.
There was guys at work talking about that a few months ago, and I hadn't seen it. And
oh, it's great.
I remember as a kid when they had that, like you had to get, what, like a billion Pepsi points to get the jet?
I think they originally said 7 million, and then they figured out the loophole, and then they changed it to 700 million.
Oh,
and then they changed... Just kidding, you can't actually win this or put that on there.
And the guy's like, oh no, this is mine.
Well, he figured out a way to, like, because you could buy Pepsi points. So they figured out that if you bought the points, you could end up buying the jet for, like, I don't know, a tenth or a hundredth of what it actually costs. Found out that through certain loopholes, if it's like decommissioned or whatever, you can legally own the jet. So, yeah, it's crazy. I think Pepsi should have given it to him.
Yeah, I'd still be suing Pepsi. I'd be like, this was your sweepstakes in your game, and I won, so it's time to pay up.
Pay up, bitches.
I just happen to have a pilot's license, so now you have to give it to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Jesus.
Better start drinking some Pepsi.
Dude, welcome to Season 11, Episode 7. We're talking about AJFA on APFA.
That should be the name of this episode.
Last week, Mike Presley was supposed to join us. I am so relieved that he is not here tonight to talk about Injustice for All Cliff'em notes, because if he was here, I'd have to tell you about our cliffhanger last week about me shitting in a bag. So, Pizzle, thank you for not showing up, good sir.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, maybe he'll show up next weekend for the Black Album. We'll see. There's a little bit more bass involved in that record.
Yeah, just a little.
Or at least you can...
Just a pinch. Isn't that what they call it in the kitchen? Just a pinch.
Pinch, a fold, a squeeze.
Pizzle says he was exhausted from a long/hard day at work. Hence, he missed talking about the mop.
It was a long day sitting in his chair.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just kidding.
We also have a Pantera domination intro dispute to settle. And I still don't have a 100% answer.
I was off a little bit. I mean, I guess I should say I was never 100% on that. That was just what, you know, as a kid, you hear things.
we've had some emails, some messages, some IG messages, some text, and it's about 50-50 of what people think happens at the beginning of Domination.
Like Billy Bob said in Bad Santa, you know, they can't all be winners, kid.
That's a great movie. Highly underrated.
Love that movie.
Oh, not the biggest Billy fan, but that movie, that movie's about a 9.5 in my book.
He's such an asshole. I just love him. He's great.
That's what makes it. Never been big on his career.
We'll leave it at that.
What are the odds that Tom Brady, Dr. Phil, and Ozzy retire in the same morning? That all happened this morning.
Yeah, and which one of them was the most shocking? Which one of them was the most, oh yeah, saw that coming? And which one of them was the most, let's just leave it at the first two.
Most shocking, honestly, none of them.
Phil was definitely the most shocking to me.
Phil Toll.
I didn't see that coming.
Dr. Phil's had his show for 21 years. It's time to do something new, man.
But it just came out of nowhere. Brady, he didn't make it to the Super Bowl again. Not again, but like he didn't make it to the Super Bowl, so he retired again.
That's fine.
And Ozzy, no surprise there. I think I was more surprised to see a retirement rather than an obituary.
That's a good point. I wouldn't be so surprised if I woke up tomorrow with my head stapled to the carpet.
My head sewn to the carpet.
Is it stapled or sewn?
I don't know. I thought it was sewn.
I'm going to go with stapled. Insert clip right here.
Because you know we have it.
We were going to call, but Eddie wanted to make it a surprise.
Yeah. You surprised? Surprised, Eddie? If I woke up tomorrow with my head sewn to the carpet, I wouldn't be more surprised than I am right now.
I think it's stapled.
It might be. What a quote. I might be off. I'm having an off night tonight. I'm happy for Brady, but I was really hoping that we could see him get one more.
Should have went out on top, bud.
That pinky ring is going to be awfully cold for the next however many years.
It's going to look a little, you know, uneven. A lopsided. But, congrats on a hell of a career.
Hell of a career. There's no question who the undisputed GOAT of the NFL as far as quarterbacks is concerned.
Joe Montana.
Hey, Montana is a GOAT. He for sure, but...
Steve Young.
I like Steve Young, too.
See? My 49ers. I just can't get past...
You're biased to the 49ers,
I can't get past the Niners dynasty when I think of GOATs.
Yeah, but how did they look against Philly?
Well, Jeff, if you didn't have a quarterback at all, it'd be a tough day at work for you as well. Zero quarterback. I could have been out there throwing Uncle Rico fucking sidearms better than that shit.
Oh my God, dude. When I saw that final score, I was like, oh. I'm like, poor Shane. I'm sure he's not happy right now.
You know, pretty good year being an NFL fan. Obviously, I've been let down by the Vikings for 41 years. They were in the playoffs. Didn't expect much, which we talked about a lot before. And 49ers made it to what I call, you know, the NFL's Final Four. Hey, not a bad season.
They say defenses win games, and
you gotta have a quarterback.
The Vikings made it pretty far for having a pretty shoddy defense, let's face it.
That's true. That's a good point.
I mean, to make it with that record and into the playoffs, even though they were snuffed first round, it's like with a pretty shoddy defense, that's pretty impressive.
Did I tell you I'm going to Newstead next week?
Yeah, that's cool.
I'm pumped. At that same little art studio I'm going to see him at again for a concert.
Yeah, I just saw a video on Facebook. He's got long hair now. It's kind of weird. Kind of was hoping he would keep the short hair.
One more attempt at... Jason, man, it's good to see you again. Is there anything you'd want to talk about on and podcast for Jason? Or I mean for all?
Would you like to talk about anything? It doesn't even need to be Metallica. Anything. Related, but if you just so happen to have a couple memories that you haven't sharing with the rest of the world... We would like to hear them.
The tell-all never-heard-before Newstead files on APFA.
So, Jason, off the record, click record.
Jason, what is your song that should not be?
I hope he says it's like One or, I don't know, Enter Sandman or something.
Just to pick his brain with just goofy questions like that would be a blast. Wouldn't even have to get deep. Like, just imagine a rapid fire with him.
About anything, honestly. Like, Jason, mayonnaise sandwiches or cheese sandwiches? Go.
All right, Jason, question number one. Jason or Rob?
Ron or Lloyd?
Definitely Dave.
I know different instruments. Yeah, and then he says, well, Dave.
But gonna go see him at the Lighthouse Art Studio on the other side of Florida. That place held maybe 200 people. He's having another art show currently going on now and scored tickets to the Friday night show.
Good for you, man. That's going to be fun.
I'm pumped. He's going to say, where's Jeff?
And you're going to say, well,
he's currently trying out for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, I heard they needed a quarterback. Back in 94, he could throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
You serious?
Oh, I'm dead serious.
Never gets old. I could throw a football over those mountains.
Watch this. Ah, that's what I'm talking about.
Freaking idiot.
Back in 82, I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. Watch this.
What the heck are you doing?
That's what I'm talking about. How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountains? Yeah, coach would have put me in fourth quarter. We'd have been state champions, no doubt. No doubt in my mind.
As he's rocking the 10 speed.
Gets tagged with the stake. Every time I see that scene, I fucking lose it.
You and I have some big news to share. Would you like to share it now, or would you like to share it at the end?
Oh, man, let's do it at the beginning. I find that good news is best served warm and, you know, the episode's early.
Okay.
Give it to him.
News that you and I have been holding on to for quite some time.
I might have told, it's like, weird one person.
Telling this shit. One person? Like your wife?
Yeah, well, yeah. And I've told, like, five or six people.
Okay. You got to give us a Christmas Vacation grandpa drum roll with the cymbal crashes and falling over at the end.
Yeah, but grandpa gets to go on.
You do that so well. Who needs tracks when you have Jeff?
Let him have it. Let her rip, Tater Chip.
Jeff and Shane are playing a show in their world famous one, the only tribute to Metallica band.
Hey, we're actually playing a show.
It'll be
not just any show.
It'll be our farewell. This is so weird to say. Final show ever.
Ever.
As one. This is it. As one.
This is it, man. After a decade plus of.
That was weird to just say.
It is. It's weird to say. It's weird to come to grips with it. But after multiple countries, countless cities, endless miles. We have reached the end of the line with this train, and man, what a journey it's been. We've seen some things, we've had some drinks, we've made a few dollar bills, and we've played in front of everyone from, what, maybe 12 people to 25,000 people and everything in between.
It's exceeded my expectations. After 14 years, I've met 99% of my goals, and on a personal and professional level, it's time to play one last show, and happy to know it's April 7th in Apple Valley, Minnesota. Keep in mind, that is where our first show ever took place, so it's going to end where it started.
Keep in mind, I wasn't in the band when it started, so this is my first time playing this venue. So this should be interesting.
That is so true. Bogart's Entertainment Center, Apple Valley, Minnesota, Friday, April 7th. We go on early because there's no fucking opener, and we are going to give you one hell of one last hurrah of a set list. I'll promise you that much.
Anybody listening, if you're from out of state, out of country,
this is your chance, baby. This is your chance.
You've been hearing Shane and I talk about it, and
one,
of course,
one last chance to see one last show.
Of course, yeah, when we finally announced, you know, we've been doing this podcast, and this podcast all started because we had the ability of touring taken from us.
True.
You know, the country that was shut down.
That is so true. I don't even think about that.
And we weren't able to do what it is that we did. And then we kind of, everything started to open back up. We started to get out, play some more shows. And I think something just kind of clicked in all of us that we realized that as much as we love doing it, we've had our peak, and we want to go out when we still feel like we're doing well.
You just know when it's time to hang up something that's been, it's been a fucking home run. And I don't want it to turn into a double or a single or a Motley Crue Vince Neil performance.
To work our way essentially from being a bar band to a nightclub venue to an amphitheater festival headlining band to a multinational, different countries around the world. I mean, I never would have thought that it would have got to that point. So it's exceeded my expectations.
God,
I know
yeah.
you said 99%. I think both of us are on the same page when that 1% that wasn't met was the only thing we wanted to do was be an arena once.
Play at Target Center.
Right. Even though we've played in front
That's
of
still,
that many people,
might,
we just had.
It might happen in my life. It might be another band, but there's going to be some way.
I'm saying.
I play four seconds of drums in Target Center.
At least you've played, you know, a minute in XL. So
I have played one hot minute in XL in front of.
That's more than I can say.
Technically, I have played an arena, but I just want it to be Target Center.
I just want an arena once. That's it. And not like a hockey arena, because we've done those. Well, I mean, the smaller hockey arenas.
April 7th, Friday night, the Friday right before Easter, Bogarts, Apple Valley, Minnesota. The place is going to be fucking packed.
Can we get the APFA alumni, everyone that has been listening, who's been on the show?
Yeah.
Let's get them there. Let's make it special. We'll do maybe a special little APFA party to go along with the one farewell.
Yeah, Chris Jericho, are you listening? Get to Apple Valley, Minnesota.
Yeah, Jericho, if you're listening, come on down, sing a song. We know that you may have
and pick up Phil Toll on the way.
For whom the Phil tolls. So there you have it, folks. Cat's out of the bag.
There it is.
Boom.
It was announced a few days ago on the one, the only tribute to Metallica socials, but here it is on APFA official news, season 11, episode 7. I got nothing else to talk about, so why don't we get into AJFA on APFA?
Yeah, enough with the sad, depressing shit. Let's get into the
It's not sad
stuff.
And depressing. It's we're hanging it up at the right time.
It's not sad and depressing for us, but there's probably going to be, I have seen some of the comments on the socials.
I know.
People are going to be very bummed when they think, because they think we're going back out on tour.
Right.
But
for
that's
$45 million, we will go back on tour.
Yeah. Oh, 44. I'll take 44.
Okay. 43 and a half. We'll just keep dwindling it down until we're at our normal rate and go, okay, we're going on tour again.
Okay, we're back.
I'm excited for that show. It's going to be a fun set list to write. At the end of the show, just come up and take my purple Tama kit away because I won't need it anymore. So it's up for grabs.
Yeah, my equipment's staying with me. So you touch my shit and I'm going to punch you. Not you, but someone that just randomly walks up and
be in the giving spirit. You're not going to use this shit ever again.
I am too. I've got plans. I already have. I've been working.
And it ain't on fucking sandwiches.
It ain't for fucking sandwiches.
20 minutes in, people want to hear Cliffham notes on
yes.
my second most favorite record of all time.
Well, let's kick it off with your favorite song of all time.
You goddamn right. Remember I said the best song was Fade to Black. Last week you said the best song was Master Puppets, which people agreed with you during our end voting for all. And we're going from best to favorite songs. Shane has finally landed on his favorite Metallica song of all time, Black Ned.
Black Ned, like Ned Flanders?
Hey, man, he was left-handed.
Oakley Dokley.
Remember the Leftorium store?
I do.
That's a great episode.
The Leftorium is no morium.
Hey, Ned.
I can't hack it anymore. You want to buy my side of the kiosk?
I'll get all the people coming out of Sears. But I got squat. People are getting all their Southpaw sundries online. All I was getting were right-handed college students who wanted to experiment.
Don't worry, Ned. Homer will tell you how to get a job at the plant.
I will?
Yes, you will.
Oh, man. Good old Simpsons.
Flanders.
Flanders.
Remember his wife died at the racetrack when the tire hit her? Right.
Yep. Went flying.
That's another great episode as well.
I just want to know how they predicted so much stuff. They must be time travelers.
They know what's going on.
They do.
Blackened. How do you think it felt for Jason Newsted to get a writing credit on the first song on his first record? He must have been like, I have arrived. Here we go.
He thought he had arrived, not knowing what was going to come his way over the next decade. He's like, oh, shit, here comes the money. Royalty. Oh, wait. Maybe not.
Oh, wait. My next song will be My Friend of Misery.
Oh, wait, you're not going to hear me on this record. Never mind, I wasn't even there.
The main riff from Blacken is Newsted's riff.
That
is a gnarly fucking riff.
That is a gnarly riff. I should have known. James can write some riffs, but that's not his style. It was such a weird kind of riff.
If you think of that riff, it's like no other in their 42 years.
No, it's a very technical...
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that it's like difficult, but it's just a technical-ish riff. Almost progressive to a certain extent.
That hard for you to play?
That riff?
Yeah.
No. No. I think... I say that only because I've been playing the riff for so many years since I was a kid.
Okay.
And it just... I don't know. There was something about that riff. I actually had, to be honest, I had a harder time with the picking of Battery than I did with Blackened.
I was just going to ask, what's harder, like Battery, Fight Fire, or Blackened?
If you think of like the actual like technical side of it, Blackened is quote-unquote the toughest.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I don't know, there was something about the picking pattern of Battery. It was just something about how it all flowed that always kind of threw me off when I was younger. So that one to me was the most difficult. Fight Fire with Fire is not a tough song. That's just straightforward. That's just your Slayer kind of,
right?
You know, Slayer picking, but then with some, you know, Metallica power chords and riffing, if that makes sense.
It does. Before we get any further, you have to realize how much people talk about the Justice record, but how 9 out of 10 drummers absolutely love the record, and it's obvious. The fills, the off tempo, the crazy shit he does, and then you get these technical drummers that try to figure out on sheet music what he's doing with all the different time signatures. When I've read that sheet music 20, 25 years ago, it's impossible to play along when you're reading the sheet music.
It does make me wonder.
You feel that song. You cannot play that song looking at music.
It made me wonder how Lars did that record. Because, I mean, we always knew he's a good drummer. But it's just like that album was so far beyond, I think, what the normal nowadays quote-unquote Metallica hater would say. Like, that album is so far beyond what it seems like he's capable of doing, but obviously he did it. Mm-hmm. He recorded it. I know there's the Lars hating conspiracies, like, oh, Dave Lombardo came in and recorded that album or something like that. You know, I don't think so. I know it was him, and obviously he did it well, but it's like, why just that one record, and then why do you never hear it again? You never hear that kind of...
That's when he peaked.
But you never hear that kind of complexity ever again. Like, even Saint Anger, which I know everyone's going to be, you know, whatever. But drumming-wise, probably the most, you know, aggressive drumming he's done since...
It is.
Since Injustice for All. And that still is nowhere near what Injustice for All is.
If Saint Anger had, I got to be careful here, normal sounding tracks and normal sounding tones and normal sounding tunings, San Anger would have been top three drumming records to talk about.
Yeah, because he does some really great stuff, but it's still not Injustice for All. So it's like, it almost bums me out because I understand why they did what they did on the Black Album, but just one song or one part where we could have heard him dive into that, like I said, almost borderline progressive, you know, where you're doing like these off-tempo, you know, things, these beats, fills, whatever you... whatever it is, you know what I mean?
I love the fills. I love the, even the part where it's just the kick drum going into that second riff. The transitions in Blacken. It's 6.5 minutes of, we don't really let off the gas, but we got three different songs in one here. And it's just, it is so, it's just so solid.
It's a very solid track. Great opening song.
To begin whipping Dance of the Dead, Winslow is the end.
That's right. You heard it first.
That's right, motherfuckers. The lyrics, the composition, the arrangement, it's
the best.
It's the best.
It's my favorite. It's
the best. Not the best song, but it's my favorite.
Well, as we move on to track two.
That's all you have to say about Blackened?
That's all I've got to say about Blacken, because the next song is my favorite Metallica song.
Termination, expiration, cancellation, human race into justice for all. Isn't that funny how our favorite songs are right? They're neighbors.
Justice for All, one of the most, still to this day, in my opinion, one of the most underrated Metallica songs. It does not get talked about enough.
They're neighbors.
Doesn't get enough love.
Probably because it's 19 hours long, more like 9:44, but close enough.
But that song doesn't feel like it's that long to me. I don't know.
The bridge really breaks things up in the middle there.
It does.
Bum, 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 bum.
There's a lot about a lot in that song.
There's a lot about a lot. Jeff's famous quote from last week's Mop special.
There's a whole bunch going on.
What is it for you that takes Justice to the top?
For one, it, like I said, being an underrated masterpiece of a metal song, it's
the drumming's phenomenal. You know,
I feel like I've said this before, so I'll keep it brief, but it's got a good little bit of everything, you know. It doesn't really have ballady parts, but it does have the nice clean guitar that gives you the sense like, all right, they obviously have the ability to write something melodic and clean and have this nice big grand entrance for the song. It's just, there's something about it. The lyrics, the way it's put together, the chorus, to me, that song, it does, but it doesn't sound like any other Metallica song. There's just something about that song that it's got this very just kind of darkness to it, but not, and I don't mean it in like load reload kind of dark, you know what I mean? Just this, I don't know.
What a drum beat that became damn famous.
It's a great song, great drum beat. It's got a great solo.
Yes.
You know,
solo. That's another thing. The harmonies, solo is bridge. It's great. Lyrics, and they haven't played it that much live.
The ending is the best part about the song, when they do the harmonies at the end there. The do 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 do, and I like the live version. The dun 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 dun. You know what I mean?
Guess how many times they played that live?
Oh, it can't be that much. I mean, I know they played it throughout the Justice tour, obviously, and it's been played a handful of times in the last decade and a half, but
you are correct.
I'm going to go 218. 257. Oh,
that's, I was actually damn gonna go close.
I was actually going to go like towards like 260, 270, but I was like, oh, that might be too high.
That's a great guess, man. You got to think every night of the Justice tour, and then just sprinkled in sporadically over the years. Not much.
Yeah.
Last time they played it was 2014. My favorite line from that song, roll of red tape, seal your lips.
I like everything about it. The lyrics, it's almost got kind of that that Megadeth-ish
yes.
kind of vibe.
Yes.
As far as the lyrics are concerned, you know,
their
talking
money
about
tips her scales again.
I could have definitely seen Dave writing those lyrics.
It's long, but with as much that needed to be said in the song and as much riffs that they had revolved around that song, it had to be 9 minutes.
It had to be. And that's a song where it doesn't feel like all the parts were forced.
No.
It doesn't feel like, it feels like it just kind of flowed out naturally to be almost 10 minutes long.
The arrangement was very well constructed because it needed that much time.
That's the thing that you can say about their first four records, or I should say their second, third, and fourth record, is like those long songs. Yeah, they can, there's some that are a little bit repetitive, but they sounded like they flowed so naturally versus like a song like you've obviously expressed your feelings about the Judas Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
Long song. It fits the Metallica formula if you think of that song in general, but it doesn't sound like it flowed naturally. I do enjoy it, but I know what you're saying.
Cut
because
up.
It sounds very pieced together. And a lot of Death Magnetic sounds very pieced together. There's a lot of Hardwired to me that sound pieced together, and it's not in a bad way, but it just doesn't have that natural flow. Like, and that's I think why people criticize what they do so much, which I mean their minds don't work the same as they did 3 decades ago, so you can't expect the same result. But yeah, there's something really really amazing to be able to have that ability to write a song that's that complex and has that many different parts and that many ups and downs and make it sound like you literally, within reason, pretty much improvised it and just whatever came out, that's how it flowed.
Right. Very true.
It's insane.
And I love Ross Helfand's quote about the Justice song more than anybody. Not verbatim, but something like, justice is lost, justice is rape, justice is gone. Justice is tiring. Justice is 19 hours long.
It's a long, it was long song, long tour, long shows.
He shot a lot of that Justice tour, and he said people were yawning at the 7 or 8 minute mark.
It's because they didn't know. Just think about that. If you could know the significance of the fact that, all right, we're seeing this song get played
every night
in their prime. And then we're not going to hear it again for another decade almost.
True.
And not only that, but we're going to hear...
True.
We're going to hear James talk before an intro tape.
That is so true. I keep forgetting about that. Injustice for All.
Things that you would never, ever see nowadays that back then, they just took it for granted. And us, you know, Metallica nerds that notice stupid little details like that, we're like, fine.
If I was a neighbor, I'd be mighty fucking pissed off. Alright, and Justice for All.
To see something like that now, we'd be like, holy shit, like it doesn't matter if they're going to go into Wherever I May Roam. The fact that he's doing something different, and it's not just lights go out, into tape.
Yeah.
Nope, he's going to do something, you know what I mean?
Very true.
I think for Metallica fans, that even that smallest little detail, people would be like, whoa, something's different, and I think we like it.
It's amazing when you think of, excuse me, got that frog in my throat from last week still. That's how old people cough. It's like a grandpa cough. If you think of Blackened and Justice, think of those two songs of how much is crammed into those 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 15, 16 minutes. There is like eight songs worth of riffs in those two songs.
And that makes sense why when you get to Eye of the Beholder, things start to slow down a little bit. They get a little bit more simple. There are definitely multiple parts within that song, but it's not nearly as complex as the first two songs.
Eye of the Beholder is a swingy jazz chorus to me.
A jazz. I mean, I know what you're saying, but just to think of Eye of the Beholder as jazz. Just think of that jazz. Swing. It's like shuffling swing dance music.
Just doesn't matter what you see or into what you read. You can do it your own way if it's just done how I say.
What I loved about that song is, so when I'm young, I hear the I hear the verse. Mm-hmm. It's got the, you know, flange or the chorus on his vocals.
Do you hear what Jeff hears?
I was like, oh, of course, because they did the song The Wait and it had the weird ass vocals. I'm like, of course, that's why wouldn't they?
Right. Good comparison. Never thought of that.
That was my first thought when I heard the song, because I heard The Wait actually before I ever heard Eye of the Beholder. I don't know how or why I heard that first, but I knew that song before I knew Eye of the Beholder. So I kind of, you know, as a little kid, I put 2 and 2 together to get 22, and I'm like, oh yeah, so this makes sense. The thing I always loved about the song, so you're talking about the chorus. On guitar, that main riff, that when they're playing that riff, they're playing it up on the higher octave, and then when he starts singing it, he goes down to the lower power chords. And I always love that transition of having like the same riff but then playing it down, you know, in the lower octave range. And it just always sounded so heavy and just gave it so much dimension and depth.
Doesn't matter what you see or into it what you read, you can do it your own way if it's done just how I say.
It's like, it's a very like Alex Lifeson thing to do, where you're taking the same riff, and like what he would do is he'd take the same riff and maybe just change the picking pattern a little bit, and it would change essentially how it sounded. Like in YYZ, he plays like the same riff and this changes the picking pattern a couple times, and it sounds completely different. Again, as a kid, I'm listening to this and I'm kind of making that same comparison. I'm listening to the song, I'm going, all right, that's a cool riff, and then they bring it down into the octave lower when James starts singing, makes it sound, you know, fucking
heavy,
sludgy and heavy. Yeah,
I agree. The song compared to the rest of the songs on the record is a little thin. I like the feel and the bounce of the song, though.
I do like the song a lot.
Great song. And they played that a lot on the Justice Tour, and then it never came back. Ever.
I wish it would have been on Binge and Purge.
And didn't Lars say in like an interview within the last couple of years it's his least favorite song?
Yeah.
Like literally his song that should not be, he didn't even flinch, he just said Eye of the Beholder. And I'm like, what? Wow.
If you could replace one song that was on Seattle Binge and Purge to put Eye of the Beholder in there, because obviously we didn't get it on that DVD, which song would you replace?
I don't have DVD, Jeff. I have the VHS version.
VHS. On Laserdisc.
So you're saying I have to sack a Seattle song to put I in its place?
Yeah, because obviously when they played I, they sacked a song and put I in there.
You are asking me to fuck with a masterpiece.
I already know what song I'd pick.
Okay, what is it? While I think about, this might be the hardest decision I've ever made in my life.
It'd be Whiplash.
Whiplash is towards the end of that set.
It is.
God, I'd love to say Battery, but Battery on Seattle is so fucking amazing.
It's so good.
I can't take Battery out of there. You can't fuck with Battery in 89. Last Crest is kind of a cop-out because it's only a minute.
I'm sure all of our listeners probably thought I was going to say Bread Fan.
Four Horses so good from that show, too. That's a tough question.
It is.
Fuck. It ain't Bread Fan. I know that much.
I wouldn't even take Bread Fan out. I love the fact that they end with it. You notice they ended with it and they didn't open with it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I catch your drift. Next. I might keeping with the Justice theme, maybe losing Harvester and putting I in.
Yeah.
In that slot, too, because Harvester's a little early.
I wasn't necessarily saying that I would put I in the Whiplash slot. That's just the song I would take out. You'd have to rearrange the set a little bit.
No, I'm thinking replacement.
If you're going straight up replacement, then yeah, Harvester would definitely be the song that I would choose then.
Yeah, sack Harvester and put I in there. And oh.
I could sack the bass solo.
That's one of my favorite bass solos. When he's playing that clean part, when he's sitting on the steps.
Meh.
Come on, man.
It's just bass. There's only four strings. Sorry, Pizzle, but...
I'm going to correct you on that. That solo, he's using a five string.
Yeah, whatever. Well, there's only five strings.
Pizzle, five string on Seattle 89, correct? Yep, thank you. Good night. I wonder what Pizzle's doing right now.
Right now as we record this, or right now as he listens to this?
As we record this. Guarantee you, I was sleeping.
Well, it's 10:46 here in good old Mini. So, yeah, he's either sleeping or he's sleepy. I could text him and say, hey, Pizzle, are you awake right now? We want to know exactly what you're doing.
Do you need what I need? Boundaries overthrown. Pizzle, wake up. Wake the fuck up. You and I have played I maybe a handful of times. It's fun.
I think we've played it like, what, three times maybe?
I like that shuffle feel to it. I get off on those type of rare tunes.
On the type of rare tunes. Well, you know what? This next song is about as rare as they come.
Very rare. Two, three, four and a half.
Or
one.
One.
I'm going to get right to the point with this. You've always had a beef with this tune.
I don't have a beef
as
with
a fan
song.
And playing it, you always have like a little eye roll, like, yeah, okay, whatever, it's one. Like, dude,
playing it, that's how I felt. I like the song itself is a great song. I have nothing against it. I just was not a huge fan of playing it because honestly, the song is boring as shit to play.
When it gets going, it's boring to play. That's what you're saying?
No, it's really
the solo.
It's just,
how is that not just fucking ripping in your fucking hands?
I don't know, because we've played it every single goddamn show.
Well, when
I
your band's
know.
Name is one, you kind of gotta play it.
Metallica doesn't play the song Metallica. Oh wait,
they should.
Yeah, no, I don't have anything against the song as far as the song goes or listening to the song. I just wasn't a huge fan of playing it live. That's all. That's all it was.
I remember as a kid when this song came out, and it was life-changing.
It was life-changing for me, too, when I first heard it, saw the music video, and figured out what the song was about.
Right. And let's be honest, the music video of Lars's playing, it was the first time you saw double bass on a music video, like his shoes and the pedals. I'm like, that footage right there was so badass.
It's one of their best music videos, and yet it's the most simple.
That's black and white, and there's nothing to it except a 1930s storyline.
I would probably still put that up in their top for best music videos ever.
Yes.
Like top five, maybe even top three.
And it was their first one.
Didn't need anything more. The song spoke for itself. And see, that's my point. I don't hate the song. The song carries the whole entire video of them just being in a warehouse and then having a few movie clips here and there.
Tied to machines that make Jeff B. cut this shit off from him.
I always liked the Cunning Stunts version of that. There was something, there was some kind of emotion I always felt like I heard in his voice in that version particularly, and not an emotion of like, it's, I almost feel like I've always seen or heard this, like you could hear the miles of the road and just everything of singing that song every single night. It's, I feel like you just see that in that performance and you hear it in that performance, and just that
really,
it's almost that like turn the page motif of just like being up on stage and singing that song. I've always gotten this vibe from that version,
like fatigue. When he's singing,
just like, yeah, almost like you can just see the the wear of playing that song.
The
not
miles.
That it's difficult, but just like, yeah, of the last few years, which have been the craziest years of their life at that point. You know what I mean? And there's something about that, like, especially when he's singing the second verse and he's like, you see him kind of looking down and then you see him look back up at the crowd. And it's just, there's something about it. It's like, I feel like you see the miles and the journey in Hetfield's face in that song. I don't know.
I'm going to watch it when we hang up. Good observation.
Something about it that I've always liked.
The thing about One is no other band or Metallica themselves can even write a song like that ever again.
No.
That's...
They tried to with you, The Day That Never Comes.
When you... kind of. When you think of the formatting of One, that... And that early on, it you can't fuck with that. That was meant to be a staple for the rest of their lives. Especially a live staple.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Think of the production that's changed over the years just with one song. It's been so many variations, and they've all been amazing.
From just a simple intro tape to a full-on pyrotechnic
war scene.
Yeah.
Through the never.
Lasers. Freaking laser beams.
Yeah, do you think of lasers, concussions, the flash pots, the shit that was shooting down, the tracers, the aircraft beacons? And now think lately, like, their video when those soldiers are marching. Like, that song itself has evolved, like, as they've aged. It's unbelievable.
It's evolved with them.
Is that solo hard to play?
It sounds kind of difficult, but it's...
Okay.
I will say this, out of the solos on the Justice record, I feel it's one of the easier ones.
Okay.
But again, I feel very biased because I've been playing the song for so long. You know what I mean? I guess we'll find out in April if it's still difficult or not, since I haven't played guitar, or I haven't played any Metallica on guitar since the last time we played live. That was the last time I've played Metallica on guitar.
Okay.
So it's been a while.
Come see Jeff fuck up one solo April 7th at Bogart's.
He's gonna find all the songs that I play really well, like Day That Never Comes,
Stone Cold Crazy.
Maybe I'll revert back to like the first year when we started playing Sanitarium.
It's funny how I'm predicting all these right as you say them.
Hey, Sanitarium was only in the beginning, and then
I got over
my little hiccup with Sanitarium.
I just figured out it's a lot of those track fours that you have a little hiccup on.
I do great on Unforgiven, though.
You nail it.
I can nail the Guitar Player of the Year solo.
You can. What the fuck happens during Stone Cold Crazy?
Honestly, okay, so with Stone Cold Crazy, it's not even that the song is difficult. I honestly, I'll admit, I don't know how the guitar solo goes. Like, I couldn't even hum it for you.
The Kirk version or the Brian May version?
Either one of them.
Okay.
And I've heard the song so many times, but that just goes to show you how many times, or how much that solo stands out to me. Like, I literally right now, if you said hum me how the solo goes, I couldn't hum it for you. I have no idea. So then when we play it, I'm like, well, fuck, I have no goddamn clue what the fuck to play.
We've only played that song 100 times probably.
And when we first started playing it, I was better at it, and then I just forgot. And I still to this day, because I don't listen to the song, and then it gets thrown in the set, and then when it gets thrown in the set, usually it's like, you know, I just don't, I don't know. I don't know what my deal is with that song. I can play everything else fucking fine.
When in doubt, a lot of whammy, a lot of wah.
Right?
Wow.
I can play in the right key. That's the thing, is I always play in the right key. I just don't necessarily play it note for note. So it's kind of like how Kirk plays now.
Okay, our last show ever, we'll make sure we close with Stone Cold. We'll go out on that note.
No, we're going to close with something fun like Blitzkrieg.
I was actually thinking about that.
I would love to close with that.
You and I have played One 600 plus times over 14 years. How many times do you think Metallica's played One, Mr. Winslow?
2,000. 2000?
1538. Picture playing that intro 1500 times.
Well, for $1 million a night, count me in. 1500 times. I'll tell you what. If I get paid what they get paid, I'll play it 1500 more times.
With a smile on your face.
With a big smile on my face.
This next song, early on in the In Podcast For All career, Justin Hunt referred to this as the Windows 95 crashing song. Dun, dun, dun.
I still think of
every
the Metallica.
Time I think of Straw now, I think of Justin Hunt.
I think of the Metallica. It was a video game that they partnered up with in like the early 2000s. It was supposed to be like some kind of like death race video game. And the preview it was the shortest straw. For some reason, every time I hear that song, that's what I think of, is that preview for that game that I have no idea what the name of it is.
Deafening, painstaking, reckoning. Shortest Straw is a mofo to play on drums live, not going to lie.
Yeah, we never played this song live, so I guess I don't
There's
know
There's a reason why.
I don't know how this song would go. Maybe we'll play it on our last show.
Nope. Any other tribute band I've seen attempt Shortest Straw, there's a reason that you should not play that song live. Trust
me.
It is.
Yeah, well, you're supposed to be that guy that does it better than the rest of them.
Shortest has some things in it that do not belong in a live setting, sorry. And I hate to rip on my boys, but when they play it live, it's the cheating version of Straw, sorry.
Huh, well, that's fair enough.
The fills. Last week we were talking about parts that they don't play live. We're talking about like Puppets, Evil, Masterterium, Black, and shit like that. They leave a complete version of Straw out for good reason, because you can't do it. Such a good song, though.
I think the last
it's
verse
a fun song to listen to.
The last verse is my favorite verse, how it comes back into it with like the vocal fade and the
that
echo.
Swell.
Yeah, it's so badass. That's kind of like the equivalent of the second verse fill going into Disposable. And then right back into it. Yeah.
The fallout has begun. Oppressive damage done. Favorite lyric. There's a lot of lyrics in that song.
Yeah, he's singing a lot.
There's a lot of spitting going on during Straw.
It's an interesting riff. I always wondered where the inspiration for that riff came from, because it's some weird, interesting single note choices in between some very classic style Hetfield riffing. You know what I mean?
True.
Great song, great intro, great everything, some weird choppiness, but that's, again, another song where that song starts getting on that borderline choppy feel where it feels like it's kind of chopped together, but it still flows somehow. It doesn't feel
forced.
That song, it doesn't feel forced.
When they play it live, it's forced.
Well, that's probably why they don't play it very much.
I love when that song climbs. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I hum that totally out of tune, but yep. When that part kind of builds and climbs there, that's a great, great part.
Also,
of that song.
I would say Shortest Straw, Afraid Ends of Sanity might, between the two, I don't know. It's definitely between one of the two. I would say probably most underrated on the album. And I don't mean that, like, I know it gets plenty of recognition from the fans, but as far as just in general from, I feel like from like the mainstream, and I get why, because it's a little bit more complicated, but there really are, you know, some great parts. And like that part that you were just humming, the bridge, the build up part there, that's a very, to me, memorable part in the song.
That's the part I think of, along with Justin Hunt's Windows 95 crash. Gent. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I take Frayed any day over Straw, though.
Yeah. Probably, yeah. They're pretty close for me.
Wow.
They really are. They're very close. But, yeah, Frayed is, you know, it's the Wizard of Oz song.
They have played The Shortest Straw as much as that guy in The Great Outdoors got hit by lightning.
That's it? Was that 68 or 66 times?
I'm sorry, you're correct. I was thinking 99. 66,
60, 99, 99.
It is 66.
Yeah, just flip your iPad upside down.
Oh, there we go. Crisis averted. Oh, shit. I've got the rotate feature on. Don't you hate when that happens?
That's why my rotate feature is never on. That's why you get
99 times.
You'd always get frustrated with Bill and I for not having our rotate turned on.
I can't stand people that do that. You'd hand me your phone to watch a video. I'm like, why isn't it turning?
Mine's always locked. Always locked. Safety always off. That's how Shane rolls around with his phone. Safety always off.
Always.
See this? All right.
Old man gave me that when I was in grade 7. Seen a lot of action. 9mm. Safety always off.
Yeah, we never played strong. We never will. And I'm just fine with that.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't think we're going to ever play Frayed Into Sanity either.
This next song, I love playing live because I get to play hard and heavy and do a ton of Larsisms live.
Yeah, but have we ever played that song?
What?
Have we ever played Frayed Into Sanity when I was in the band?
I'm talking about Harvester of Sorrow, dumbass.
Oh, wow. I forgot Harvester of Sorrow.
Track 6 there, Jeffrey. Try to keep up with us. There's a lot about a lot.
Yeah, and clearly I see this just goes to show you how often I listen to this record. I legitimately wholeheartedly thought we were moving on to Frayed End, and
we've played Harvester probably 500 times out of our 600 plus shows. That's how much I love playing it.
And I forgot about it. Shame on me.
All have said their prayers. It's so heavy. It's so in the pocket. I love playing Harvester. Now let's talk about Metallica's version of Harvester.
Good, interesting awesome drum intro. Beat. Yeah.
The Tom part, kind of pre-Sandman Toms he's getting into there.
Sam, don't you ruin that song by calling it Sandman Toms. Sandman has fucking Harvester Toms, bro.
Oh, so you're saying Sandman stole the Sorrow Toms.
Yeah, don't you put Sandman vibes on a good song like Harvester.
Planting seeds of hate, you stole my toms, trapped far beyond my fate.
Great song. I like listening to it. I like hearing it live. Not one of my favorites to play live. For me, on guitar, it's not that fun on guitar.
It's pretty repetitive on the old fretboard, isn't it?
Yeah, there's not... I enjoy the solo. I do like the solo on this song. But, yeah, there's not... there was nothing too exciting. After the first chorus, where we go back into the main riff... And it's all on the crash. That's clear. Pretty great.
That part? Oh, when I'm crashing?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Right before it goes into the second verse.
I gotcha.
Yep. That's always fun live. It's heavy. It's good groove.
Don't forget to drink up and shoot in, kids.
James has never shot up. What does he know?
And then you can let the beatings begin. Sound like a nursery rhyme.
He talked to Slash and Nikki Sixx and said, hey, what's this like?
Yeah, probably just put the syringe down. You'd be a lot better off in life.
He said, I put down the syringe and I picked up the Coors.
Yo, waitress, get your ass over here. Think about how iconic that pause in the middle has become in their live show.
Oh, absolutely.
Right before all have said their prayers. That has become a huge like moment in their show, and everyone knows it's coming. And if you think about it, it's so simple and kind of dumb.
I've always wanted them to just end the song there and just make people think that they're going to go back into it and like, then just... And he's sitting there at the mic.
Give me fuel, give me fire.
I've got something to say. It'd be great if they played it in April Fool's show and then they played that song. And then it's over, and then James just says April Fools, and then goes right into
so fucking what?
That's a great idea. That would catch
something
everyone off guard.
That'd be the coolest thing ever. Like, you're waiting for the song to come back in, and but he has to wait for like a good 30 seconds, like, and then nothing. Or just walks away from the mic.
Or so fucking what?
It would be pretty cool.
Infanticide. Whatever that means.
Yeah, he was just making up words. Kind of like how they made up their band name or however they found it. I mean, I know how Lars found it, but I've never really quite figured out what the word means. It's not an actual word. Like, it is, but it isn't. Like, what the fuck does Metallica mean? You know what I mean? I've always wondered that when I hear that. I'm like, how is it that the greatest band name on earth, it's not like a thing or a word or something? Like, what does it mean?
It means success.
Has anyone ever wondered that? I mean, we know you can figure out Slayer, you can figure out Megadeth, you can figure out Iron Maiden, Judas Priest. Like, most of these band names.
When I'm at my meet and greet in November in Detroit, so this is Detroit, huh? This is Detroit, huh? I'm going to say, Lars, let's just get down to the fucking bread and butter. Let's answer what has never been answered, okay?
What does the name mean? We know where he found the name and how he came up with the band name idea, but mm-hmm. What does it mean?
It's metal.
What word is it?
And you might want to lick it.
Yeah, metal ica. Like
Metallica.
It's still to this day, it really blows my mind. And maybe it's been answered somewhere some time ago and I've just never bothered to look it up, but man,
these are the
I really don't know.
That keep Jeff Winslow from getting a good night's rest, people.
That's not what keeps me up, but it's going to now
going
that you
to.
Said it. Now it's going
You're
to.
You're
going to
be up until April 7th, until our Bogart show, thinking, what the hell is Metallica mean?
And then I'm going to get up on stage and we're each going to get on the mic to do our farewell speeches and say thank you for all this time. And I'm going to get up there and I'm going to say, so what does Metallica mean? Does
you
anybody know?
That. And just walk off.
That's it. What does it mean? And then put my guitar down and just walk off, like scratching my head.
And I'm just going to go, same time next year. Oh, wait.
Yeah. Same time next life.
How many times have they played Harvester of Sorrow, in your opinion?
527.
Way off.
Ooh, is it way more or way less?
800.
Good for them. That's more than I thought, for sure. Obviously.
That's a lot of all I've said their prayers kind of chatter.
That's a lot of thinking about, hey, we could end this song right here, or we could go back into it.
This next song, unfortunately, they've only played 12 times. And in my opinion, it's one of the best on the record.
They've only played it 12 times? That's it?
Yeah, we're talking about The Struggle Within, if you're trying to
follow. Yeah, are we moving on to the... Am I on the right song now? Are we finally talking about...
What song do you think we're on now?
Well, I would think that we're on Frayed Into Sanity now.
Insert Jump in the Fire, correct answer, trivia bell right here.
To Live Is to Die? Fuck. After I embarrass myself, that's all right. I don't care. I hope I get some hate mail for that. Brain fart.
Oh, we, yo. We, yo.
So now we're on the Wizard of Oz song. Yo. So it's always reminded me of.
It's one of the best songs on the record. And
100%.
I just think it didn't get enough love or got played live because of where it is in the track listing. It's
again,
deep.
Like I was talking about,
this
being
be
one
like
of the most
track
underrated songs.
Three.
Frayed Ends as track three and Eye of the Beholder as track seven. That'd
yes.
be interesting.
Yeah, it got too deep in the record. That's what happened to Dyers. Now, Dyers has to be the closer, but it got kind of lost in the track listing.
Dyers has to be close. Let's talk about Dyers when we get there. Frayed Ends of Sanity. Very long song, but it's... Do you think that it gets the disposable vibes, the repetitiveness?
Yes.
But you like it better. But you obviously like it better because you don't dislike Disposable as a song, but you've expressed multiple times on the repetitiveness of the song.
Do I like Freight Ends better than Disposable?
I'm sure you do.
1,000%.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you do.
100,000% more.
But think about it. It is very much in that kind of same style as Disposable. Not quite as long, but...
No, because it doesn't have the thrash beat.
I guess.
It's got more pocket. That, as a drummer, I take these Justice songs over Puppets any day.
At least not until we get to Dyer's Eve.
That changes things.
That does change things.
But Frayed has that warmth and depth that Disposable doesn't have.
Well, it's because Frayed Ends of Sanity has a sing-along type of chorus.
Never hunger, never prosper, Jeff.
I mean, you got Back to the Front that the crowd can sing live, but Frayed Ends of Sanity, if it would have been earlier in the track list, like you said, and it got maybe more recognition.
You're talking about Old Habits Reappear?
You could easily. Because of the way the melody line is structured and the fact that there's not too many lyrics there. It's pretty straightforward. That's easily a lyric that you could get the crowd to sing.
Fighting the fear of fear, growing conspiracy, everyone's coming to Bogart's on April 7th.
I mean, even the Frayed Ends of Sanity part, you know. He could have said, sing it right before... Frayed Ends of Sanity, and everyone would have sang that. Frayed Ends of Sanity.
Hear them calling one more time. Hear them calling me.
Maybe we should play that song, because I've never played that song.
Life, death, want, waste, mass depression. Favorite line. Old habits reappear. Jeff can play the Sanitarium solo now.
Yeah, but I can't think of how the solo goes in this song either.
What?
I'm sure.
Come on.
Off the top of my head right now, I can't think of it.
You have what they call brain fog in this generation.
Brain fog, or it could be lack of listening to this record because it's been so goddamn long.
You got
to
put Larry Levine's pipe down and clear that brain out of yours.
I could tell you how the solo to... Dyer's Eve goes.
Oh, I remember that one. We're not talking about Dyer's Eve.
Well, I know, but
we're talking about
that
the Wizard of Sanity.
Oh, I thought Dyer's Eve was next. I was trying to skip songs again.
Frayed is. It didn't get enough.
No,
love. It's too deep in the record. It's kind of like My Friend of Misery. A great example: Wolfhead Man. Way too deep in the bottom of that listing. Such a good song. Why is it so fucking deep in the late in the record?
This is what I like about how the music industry or artists and bands have changed, because that whole it being deep in the record doesn't apply anymore. Some of the bands that I listen
no,
to
but when this came out and you and I grew up on it were like, that's a later track.
And but that's why was it like that? Why do you think it was like that at that time?
Because we didn't have instant gratification of clicking a song on YouTube or your phone in a nanosecond. You had to get the cassette, turn it over, fast forward to find the fucking song.
But if you liked the record, you were going to listen to it all the way through. So each song, you were going to essentially listen to the same amount.
You and I are complete Metallica freak nerd dorks that live the shit. But let's be honest, after One and Harvester, how many people took the tape out and went... Oh, that's pretty good.
I'm sure majority of people, which is
here, fucking.
It's still surprising. I had cassette tapes when I was young, and I would, you know, I had Moving Pictures by Rush. That was the first cassette I ever had, and Limelight was always my favorite song. But I didn't stop listening to the record after it was over.
True. But you know what I mean.
I do know what you mean. No, that makes complete sense. And once you said that,
we didn't have shuffle back in those days. Until we got CD motherfucking B.
It seems like even when CDs came out, though, that because if you think about it, there were some great songs in the Load and Reload era that kind of got lost in the mix towards the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And it is interesting how it has shifted, because like I said, some of the bands I listen to, one of the records I've been listening to a lot lately, one of the main singles is track 11 out of 12 songs. And it's like one of the main singles off the record. And it's fairly common nowadays for bands to do that, where they'll put the first or the biggest single in the middle randomly or at the end of the record. And I get why, like what you were saying, because you have that instant gratification or instant, you know, being right. able to pick the song. But it is kind of interesting when you take a step back and look at how it's changed. Because even when CDs were a thing, that's still, it seemed like that was a thing. Like the singles or the popular songs were always going to be earlier in the record.
Kind of, now that you've said that, I'm kind of surprised that Lux is track 6.
See?
Yeah.
It's like they're stepping into the modern, you know, and it,
Too Far Gone?
Too Far Gone. It's interesting to see that shift, because you'd think that
where is Too Far Gone? Too Far Gone is 10. Is that going to be the song?
What if that's the song? To Live is to Die. That's an interesting song, because most people would consider it an instrumental, even though technically with spoken word, that makes it not an instrumental.
In my book, it's an instrumental.
In my book, it's an instrumental too, but it technically isn't, though. There's lyrics to the song.
Lyrics, or are they Cliff Burton's scratch pad that they found later on?
Well, yeah, but that's still technically a lyric to the song, is it not?
Technically, yes.
James does spoken word and screaming suicide. That doesn't make those lyrics any less lyrics.
Throwing down a rope, a lifeline of hope.
Throwing down a rope, there goes the Pope. Oh, wait, I can't say that because the Pope actually just passed not long ago. Sorry to all the Catholics out there. I apologize. We better make this quick because I know this song puts Pizzle to sleep. He thinks it's boring.
This is my secret. That's a word. I just made that up.
Kind of like Metallica is a word.
Secret. Webster's going to have to come out with a new revision of their dictionary.
There we go. Secret. That's going to be the next Metallica band right there.
How would you spell secret?
S-E-C-R-E-N-T. Secret.
S-E-C-R-E-N-T. Okay, got it.
I feel like that's how I would spell it.
That's going to be my shirt. Your shirt is There's a Lot About a Lot. Secret. Okay. Secret. Hashtag secret.
I just want mine to say a lot about a lot and then say golf clap somewhere on it.
Oh, fucking, like, on the back of the neck, hashtag?
Hashtag golf clap, for sure.
If Bill McClure was on the God mic, those would have been ordered by this week.
I'm still waiting, and he even texted us back and said he would join in, and where the fuck is he? What are we paying you for, Bill?
We're paying him?
In high fives.
All this I cannot bear to witness any longer, Bill. Cannot the kingdom of salvation take me to Farmington?
Now, let's be real. This whole song is only, for the most part, only good because of the middle. If that whole middle interlude part was not there, this would be a very boring song. That's where I will agree with Pizzle. But because you have such a good interlude, it makes up and it makes the simple parts work because
true,
you have
true.
But
it's long too.
It's a very long song, and it's got arguably probably the greatest interlude they've ever written.
Ooh, strong statement.
I'll take that interlude over Puppets.
Wow.
Down. I'll take that melody line, that whole thing. The only problem is I wish that it was about a minute longer of it.
That's what makes Jason's solo in the 89 shit Smooth, because he goes into that.
Yep.
Guess how many times they've played that live?
Twice.
Is
it only once?
And I was there for it. I shit myself, and then I peed myself a little bit, and then I shit myself again.
That's fucking gross.
And then a little more trickled out, and then something else must have happened, and before you know it, it was over. And I'm like, did that just happen in a club?
Before you knew it, he was sleeping. No.
Fillmore, night two. I literally, my mouth was open, and I turned to my ex-wife, and I went, do you understand the significance of this right now?
And she said no.
That's about what happened, unfortunately.
Uh-huh. That's most people probably say the same thing.
I went, holy fuck, it's happening. Yeah.
Great song, great interlude, great spoken word. Yeah, I'm sure we'll never hear that song live again, so that was a special moment for you.
Amazing. And then Lou Reed came out about 10 songs after that.
Well, on that note, let's kick it. Let's kick it up a few quads and speed it up a little bit.
You opened with To Live Is To Die, Kid Rock made an appearance, Marianne Faithful made an appearance, and then here comes Lou.
So they played To Live Is To Die, but they didn't bust out the final song, Dyer's Eve.
They did not play that at the Fillmore, no. Those four nights, they did not play Dyer's.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. I wonder why they didn't do it, and not for the obvious.
Because Ozzy was there, and they're like, Ozzy's going to retire in the year 2023. We got to get some songs with him.
Yeah, Ozzy's going to retire a decade from now. Fuck. Dyer's Eve, still my favorite Kirk solo. Something about it that I always will love.
That's right, it is your favorite Kirk solo. You've said that from the day I met you.
Yeah, it's always been my favorite. I don't know why, there's just something about it. It's like, that to me was the solo where it's like, damn, not... Take this very lightly when I say this, people, but that's like, damn, Kirk is actually a good guitar player when you hear that solo.
That solo is so ripping, dude.
It is. And like I said, take that very lightly when I say it. That's not me ripping on him saying he's not a good guitar player, but that's like, wow, that's a solo that I feel like I would actually not fear learning, but I'd be like, oh shit, like this is going to be a little bit of a task here.
Same for me.
Yeah.
And it's an endurance test for me.
I still to this day kind of wish that...
The format of that song is easy, but the endurance is a different story.
I wish it would have just been like a... Instead of... Because that's like... By doing that, they hindered themselves from ever playing it. If that would have been just a straightforward thrash beat without all the double bass...
You might have a point.
I feel like that song would have got played a lot more. And why didn't they do it in the Justice era when Lars was in his prime and could play it live and make it sound good? Because
they had to play Eye of the Beholder.
It is just absolutely mind-boggling to think that they waited. It's just like Fixer. They waited too long to play that song.
Saint Anger tours when they debuted Dyer's Eve. 04, L.A.
I remember, and I was so excited to hear the audio, and it doesn't sound bad, but of course Lars doesn't play it the way everybody wanted to hear him play it.
I know.
And what's crazy is coming off the Saint Anger record, it's like, motherfucker, we know you can, at that time, could still play like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if there was a time, he still could have played it. I truly believe that he has got some great double bass still for his age, but I truly believe he could not play that song right now. I don't think he could get through the
album version.
Yes.
I'm
talking double bass wise. I don't see him pulling that off right now.
Not right now. It'd be close, but it wouldn't be what you and I would expect.
But I think he still could have done it in 04 coming off of Saint Anger.
Yes, he could.
Yes. And that's, it's like, you know what I mean? But it feels like because they didn't do that.
Day in, day out, Jeff wants more double bass.
I wanted more live, but I wanted less on the record. Isn't that funny?
You wanted a more clean attack on the record rather than...
And if they were that kind of band, or Lars was that kind of drummer consistently, like Dave Lombardo, it would be fine. But that just wasn't his thing. And I've said that before, so I'm not going down that road again. But amazing closing to a record. I mean, can you get more aggressive? Can you get more energy? Can you get more angry to close a record? I mean, the lyrics are very angry.
Last week I talked about how Battery and Damage were like kind of bookends to that Puppets record with Thrash.
Yep.
Think of Blackened and Dyer's.
100%.
And Dyer's is probably the best closer that they've ever had.
Oof. Come on. I'm going through them all right now.
You're going through your discography.
I'd say second best.
What?
Second best closer.
Do not say Outlaw Torn.
Nope, it's not Outlaw.
Do not say Call of Cthulhu.
It's not Call of Cthulhu.
What the fuck is it?
I think Fixer's a better song.
What? What are you smoking from Larry's fucking stash? Fixer over Dyer's Eve?
I'm sure there's other people out there that would agree. Write in and podcastfall@gmail.com. Am I that crazy that Fixer's a better song?
Wow. I don't know about that, bud.
Think of how well that song is put together.
I'm my hand out holding you over the cliff. I still got you. You sure about this?
I'm sure about it. Just as sure as I was when I put Load and Reload up at the top.
Fixer over Dyer's Eve for all around song.
Yes.
Or we're just talking closer.
I think
I'm talking, well, closer.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. It's my favorite out of the closers, and it's probably, yeah, I don't know, man.
You're killing me. You are killing me, Smalls.
If we go out of all the classic records, without a doubt, Dyer's Eve is the best closer. Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Fixer doesn't even, I love Fixer. Don't worry. Don't get me wrong about that. But it doesn't even come close to Dyer's Eve.
Why? Because it doesn't have a bunch of thrash and heaviness and fast riffs. I think musically, it's a much better put together song. If you look at it from a musical standpoint, it's a much better composed song. Dyer's Eve, the verse, there is no riff. It's just power chords.
Clip my wings before I learn to fly.
I love the song. I'm not taking away from the song by any means. I'm not. So that's not me hating on the song. So let's not go down that road.
You're not, but I'm just like, dude, that's, I don't know about this one.
That's the only song, in my opinion, that I would put over Dyer's Eve. Otherwise, Dyer's Eve comes before all of the rest of them, before Spit, before Apocalypse, All Within My Hands, Outlaw Torn, Struggle Within, Damaging.
I had to think about All Within My Hands for a minute. I'm like, yeah.
And that's saying something there, because you know how much I love that song and that record.
All Within My Hands and My Apocalypse compared to Dyer's Eve. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, not even close. It's not. I wouldn't even. And this is coming from a diehard Saint Anger fan. I wouldn't even put Hands in the same. You can't even. That's not even the same conversation.
But to me, Fixer's not even. It's not even in the same ballpark as Dyer's Eve.
He's like, man, it's not the same sport. It ain't the same fucking league.
No, not even close. You just basically clipped my wings before I learned to fly with that statement. I'm like, what?
You don't have to feel bad about that. That's a good thing.
I just want to make sure that you are mentally healthy and here and in the now.
Still my favorite Kirk solo. Still my favorite Kirk solo.
That solo is fucking badass, and it's the best closer of their career.
And still some of my favorite lyrics in a song, too. I love the kind of the sentiment behind all of it.
It's deep. It's personal.
It's deep. And for a metal song, that might be one of the first times in Metallica's career that we hear the true personal side of James come out in a song.
Yeah, when you read those lyrics word for word, it's deep.
And if you know James's background and his history with his family, it's heavy. It's deep. And I don't mean heavy as in like heavy metal, but like it's a, you know, heavy on your shoulders, kind of burdening feeling.
The line that hits me when you think about his parents is the, what?
Always censoring my every move.
Mm-hmm. Just one line. It's like, okay, there's some fucking issues going on here that are really serious right now.
Absolutely. And
hear nothing, say nothing.
And metal music, that wasn't, you weren't supposed to do that. You weren't supposed to put your, at that time, you know, it's not like metal music nowadays where it's, you know, emotional metal music, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, that wasn't the thing then. You know, you weren't supposed to let people know that you have feelings. But because of the song being so heavy, I feel like it gets overshadowed. So people don't, or didn't really kind of realize, all right, even though it's a really heavy song, there's some deeper rooted issues here. And then obviously we hear it more come out in the Black Album, and then it really starts to come through on Load and Reload. And
I think these lyrics would have touched a lot more people if it was like an Unforgiven type of song.
Yeah.
Do you have a vote tonight? Because if you don't, I do.
I do have a vote. We could do two votes if you want, but I do have one.
And voting for all, take one.
Take one. There's been the discussion throughout all of the decades that Injustice for All needs to be remastered with more bass, because I don't have to tell you or the listeners.
I already have an answer for you.
Do you think the album should be remastered, or do you think it should be left alone to sit in its glory and be the way it's supposed to be?
Don't fuck with history. My answer is no, period.
I'm with you too, but there's a lot of people.
Touch it. It's perfect.
I bet you this vote is going to go a lot more towards a yes for a remaster. I'm not saying that it's yes is going to win, but I bet you there's going to be more votes than you think for yes.
Do the right thing, people. I'm going to see Jason Newsted 2 days from when you're listening to this, and I'm going to tell him the results. Do the right thing.
I agree.
Because even Jason himself said no.
No, you don't mess with something that's
Jason
that
said there's a reason we're talking about this 30 years later. It's because what happened is what happened.
There you have it, folks. That's take one. Let's hear take two of And Voting for All.
And Voting for All, season 11, episode 7. Which is the better album closer, Dyer's Eve or Fixer?
Oh my god.
That's going to a vote too.
I wonder how that's going to go. Actually, surprise, I bet you that doesn't sway as far as you think it does either.
I'm going to say 80-20, Dyers. We're talking about this next week. I'm documenting this, and we're talking about results. Okay. We usually don't, but we're going to. I'm going to say 80-20, Dyers over Fixer.
I hope you're right, because I will say usually, in general, when it comes to these votes, I usually do pretty good.
So you're going to say... Your prediction? You think it's going to be 50-50?
I don't think it's going to be 50-50. I think Dyers is going to win, but I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I could see it in the ballpark range of
okay,
like a 60-40 or a 65-35. I don't think it's going to be like an 80-20 or a 90-10.
I'm going to watch this closely.
I think it'll be closer than you think. I think Dyers will win. That's my prediction, but I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I think there's a lot of people out there that will hear it the same way that I do, that if you break it down musically and you think about what truly is a better composed song, it's Fixer.
Dyers versus Fixer, and to master or not master, that is the question. Polls open early Thursday morning, closing late Thursday night with results on Friday.
Friday morning! All right, and there you have it. That's Injustice for All, baby.
And then Friday evening, I'm going to go see Jason and share the fucking results with him and be like, dude, you ready to record a podcast episode? Let's go. Well, I'm ready. Got the studio out in the car. Come hang out.
Jason, in voting for all, James or Lars, and go.
What era are you asking that question? When he got James hired or when he left?
James or Lars, who do you, as in 2023, who do you like more? Because that wouldn't go viral in about 2 seconds.
I'll take Peter Mensch from Q Prime.
Yeah. Good answer. Spoken like a true politician, Jason.
Oh, my God.
Took the easy way out.
Mr. Newstead, it'd be in your best interest to join APA for the kickoff of season 12. Just do the right thing, Jason. Jeff Winslow's words, not mine.
Right. Paul Stanley's words, not mine.
Just do the right thing. People! Dude, an hour and 30 flew by. We talked about everything from Ozzy to you and I playing one last show to Dyer's Eve.
To Dr. Phil. Dude, I like Phil. Curator, I listened to his episode. Dictator.
Always listen to his episode on Rogan. Every move.
Everybody should go listen to it. Phil's a genius.
Dr. Phil on Rogan, you're saying?
Yeah, great episode.
Is it new?
End of last year, so fairly new, but
pretty solid.
Amazing episode. You're going to be like, holy shit, this world is fucked.
I knew that 3 years ago.
Oh, boy.
My only beef with Rogan is that I don't have that much time to listen every fucking week because it's 5 hours long.
Yeah, it's like 2.5-3 hours, and it's tough. So I usually have to listen. I actually sit down and listen to it in one take. It usually takes me a day or two to listen through.
I'll check it out.
Great episode. Really eye-opening to just, like I said, how fucking weird the world is.
It's getting weirder. There's a Chinese satellite over the United States right now as we speak, and the military is doing nothing about it.
Yeah, they're listening to us right now on and Podcast for All.
That's why we got so many clicks in the last hour.
Yeah.
China's listening to the Cliffham notes.
Where did all those clicks come from? Well, they came from China.
China. Great China. People.
Well, it's because it comes from China.
I'm just scared Pizzle's going to join us next week, and then I'm going to have to talk about my shit in the bag cliffhanger for another week.
You are. I'm going to text him and make sure he's on for that one.
Okay. Don't forget, people, Jeff and I rocking one last time, one, the only tribute to Metallica, April 7th, Apple Valley, Minnesota, Bogarts Entertainment Center. One last hurrah.
And for anybody who gets a wild hair up their ass and lives out of state and wants to travel in, literally email us at impodcastforall@gmail.com. Yes. Let us know if you're coming and we will take care of you.
Yes.
Not necessarily buying your plane ticket, but we will take care of you once you're here in Minnesota.
Jeff will send you his visa information, and you can book the highest, classiest hotel in Minneapolis with free first-class round-trip airfare.
Yep, all you got to do is see Bill McClure Jr. for details, and he'll pay for all of it.
All you have to do is go to iTunes and leave us a 7-star review. None of that 5-star bullshit.
Yeah, we like 7.
It's been fun, dude. That's a long episode. Justice, my second favorite record next to Ride the Lightning. Had a lot of fun. Thank you.
Justice is a long record. Black Album has more songs on it, but could we make the episode shorter? That'd be freaking hilarious if the longer album was actually a shorter episode.
All right, we're all familiar with Sandman, Sad, Rome Unforgiven, Nothing Else. Let's talk about Holier.
Something tells me that that's kind of how that episode's going to go. We'll probably get through like the first 3 or 4 songs in about 5 minutes. Enter
can't,
Sandman.
Can't
well,
wait to talk
that's,
about
that's
Holier
on.
And Don't Tread on Me.
I just want to talk about Of Wolf and Man because it's the only song I listen to from that record. So,
how? We got any pizzles in here tonight?
I listened to that and Unforgiven. I'll admit, Unforgiven's still a listener fatigue song that I listen to.
If I did not listen to The Struggle Within when that record's on. Struggle should have been on Justice.
It's not one of my favorite songs on the record.
I'm convinced Struggle was a leftover from Justice.
I could see that.
It's so different. It is not black at all. It is not Black End. It is Justice End.
Right.
What did I say tonight? Secret? Secrent? Secrent.
Secrent.
There it is.
Secrent.
Secrent. There's a lot about a lot. Season 11, episode 7. I'm out of here. See you, dude.
See you later.
And bye.
And bye.
And Justice for All and Podcast for All. Justice has been done. Justice has been right. Podcast has been done. And the podcast is 1 hour and 35 minutes long.
One at Bogart's, April 7th. And bye.
Curator Dictator. Pizzle, you're awake.
Are you awake, Pizzle? Pizzle.
Pizzle. Innocence torn from me without your shelter. Start the Dodge Ram up and go to Bogart's August, April 7th.
August, April, same thing.
Larry! Larry! Bye.
Bye.
And bye.
And bye.
And goodbye.
And bye.
And justice for all.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Reaching out for something and you got the feel. Or clutching to what you thought was real. Kicking at a dead horse pleases you. No way of showing your gratitude. So many things you don't want to do. What is it? What have you got to lose? What the hell? What the hell? What is it you think you're gonna find? Hypocrite. Hypocrite. Borderless attention to the poor.
See this? All right.
Old man gave me that when I was in grade 7. Seen a lot of action. 9mm. Safety always off. Told me he was proud of me once. Fucking prick.